Sox popped higher today. We saw the Dow up over 540 points after the April jobs report came out much better than expected. 230,000 plus jobs were created in this country when Wall Street was just expecting 180,000. Are the good times here to stay? Well, we're here to answer that for you. Welcome to Buy, Hold, Sell Cinco de Mayo edition. I'm your trader, Todd Schoenberger, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Tobin Smith, out in sunny and hot Scottsdale, Arizona, and he is decorated for the occasion. I would say you look great, Toby. And we are joined by a featured guest, Jeffrey Hirsch from the Stock Traders Almanac, is back with us on Buy, Hold, Sell. So, Jeff, I want to start with you.
Me too.
Your seasonal sell signal came out on the day that we saw the markets pop higher. What gives? I mean, it's were you a little late or a little early on this?
I think we were on time. It actually triggered on April 25th. So for us, we were in October, our Dow position up 10.8. S&P position up 8.2. We're still carrying the NASDAQ. So the Dow and S&P best 6 months ends in April. We start looking for a MACD trigger. We got it. We don't sell in May and go away. We reposition. We transition to neutral between now and the NASDAQ sell. We got rid of our diamonds and spiders. Sold a couple other sectors. And then, we tighten up stops and we're looking at some gold and some bonds. I picked up some bond ETFs. So we're getting ready to, sort of enjoy some decent returns in bonds that we haven't had for a bunch of years while the federal government figures out their debt ceiling business. I want to use the Yiddish word mishigas. There's a lot of mishigas going out there.
A lot of mishigas, darling. Let me tell you that right now.
Hashtag that.
Just perfect for us because we're all sugar here.
Yeah, but, Jeff, I'm curious about. So I thought you were earlier in gold. I was going to give you some points on that on your gold thing, but you just went into gold, you're saying now.
We're looking at getting in some now for the worst months because of what's going on with inflation and the banks, even though we had a pop today. But looking at our seasonal charts and the way the market has been tracking the seasonal patterns like we discussed from last October through now, we had the best 6 months in a midterm year up 19. And that's another record, 19 in a row. So we're looking to get cautious, not crazy, not going into we look at a range like 3,800, 4,200-ish. We'll see if we break out or not. We move with the markets, but
yeah,
going away. We're not
Jeffrey,
going away.
It's the damnedest thing. When you plot like news points and try to correlate quote unquote bad news, there's good news or is good news bad news. That flip-flopped like five times this week. Stuff that was supposed to be bad, something was bad.
It's a song for that. Sometimes bad is bad and sometimes bad is good.
Yeah. I'm so bad, I'm good.
I got an analog for you, Toby.
Yeah.
2011, right? Debt ceiling crisis.
Boy.
What did we have here? We had Democratic president, Democratic Senate, Republican House of Representatives, John Boehner, and Obama. They had a little simpatico. I'll use a little Cinco de Mayo word. They were hanging out in the White House movie room, and they're like Boehner bumps Obama a Marlboro Light. I don't remember that. Little kind of.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
I don't think McCarthy and Biden have the same cordial relationship, but the same first move was made. With what McCarthy did on Wall Street. Okay, you got me. And then if you look at the chart, I posted it on my blog. It's in the newsletter and stuff as well. But the correlation between the S&P in 2011 and 2023 is uncanny. Hmm. And what do we have? We had an April 29 top on in 2011 and a 19.4% of memory serves decline in the S&P to the October bottom in October 3rd, 2011. So, I know it's a one-off. It's an analog to 1 year, but there's a lot of similarities going on. Congress's calendar hasn't changed. They still take their August recess. There's still a pre-election year.
Yeah.
Election campaigning cycle come up in the fall. So, that's one of the sort of one-off factors we're looking at.
He's got a point, Toby.
Hey, Todd, first off, none of you schmucks have the privilege and honor of having John Boehner as your guest on Fox Business News' America's Nightly Scoreboard. And they cut to me and say, okay, the Speaker of the House is coming on. So I say, and don't miss what's coming up next. We have John Boehner with us.
I got to find the clip for that. If I do,
they buried that. But I, at the end, I was so embarrassed. My ears are like exploding with the directors. Right? And I said, oh, fuck, man. I'm out of the TV business. Which is,
that was your last show.
That is it.
He jumped the shark.
I'm flying home And, you know, unlike the, I don't know, 4 kilowatt Wi-Fi they had at the time. And I'm trying to look up on YouTube, you know, has anybody else said it? There's like 500 of them, of newscasters saying John Boehner. Because if you haven't seen his name spelled,
yeah,
you know, your brain just says, how can that be Boehner? Well, I just, you know, so you're, that's the other one that catch me, 3,800, 4,200, 38. So the Dow is now, you know, even for the year. The S&P, I didn't see the last number today because, you know, I was actually doing business other than you guys. I don't know what you guys did today. And
did some business.
Everything is bizarre. Gold, that makes sense. Banking crisis, okay, that makes sense. Oil prices. Oil prices are pricing in global recession. And I guess because we got the jobs number that said, well, you know, the U.S., you know, I mean, it's a tale of two cities. Great, we had new jobs, but it's service jobs that are keeping inflation, service wages keeping inflation high.
Leisure and hospitality's hot.
Leisure and hospitality, et cetera. So yeah. I don't know if the algorithms are just running the show and that just a positive number, you know,
Here's the thing.
Bye.
Unemployment is at 3.4%. You can't have a recession when unemployment is 3.4%.
Yeah, but you also can't knock out 4%, 5% inflation either.
I mean, the trajectory of the inflation, though, right now.
The trajectory of inflation is you know, sort of like me after watching Yellowstone. I sort of lose my interest, right? So I...
Look at the PPI.
Yeah.
It's going practically negative.
Right.
CPI, the old school one, negative. Even the PCE is all heading south, you know, on the year over year, you know, percent change. You know, it's been a rolling recession, a rolling bear market. We had a couple of negative quarters of GDP last year. Everyone's expecting it to be this huge sign. Okay, we've had our cataclysmic, you know, bear market bottom. Well, we may have had some of that in October. I contend we do, but it doesn't have to all fit in. I mean, the thing that we noticed looking back at the Fed minutes from the 80s when we were doing a little research in there.
Well, you were in diapers? But I mean, come on.
It's on the internet. I wasn't in diapers. I was in middle school. I was born in 66, man.
Oh, okay.
But I know I look young. But
you're on freaking Zoom. You got the thing that makes you look younger, for Christ's sakes.
Pushes a button, he looks younger.
Yeah. The point, man, listen. Was that they used to listen to the bond market.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, they used to say, hey, well, the so-and-so window's doing this, you know, maybe we give it, and then they would make some adjustments. Now, they're trying to be smart and front-run the thing. That's why I know I'm not a this time is different guy, because it's not.
Yeah,
we're all here to do the same shit. But the impact of the yield curve inversion and the rate thing, it's all trying to lead the bond market, whereas it used to follow it. So that's why I think we can have our recession prior to this inversion, this mishigas that we've been talking about.
Mishigas. Well, Jeff, I think you're right on all those points. I mean, again, just to go for like the conundrum wrapped around a riddle, you know, the leading indicators, it's never happened before. They're down almost 9 or 12 months, right, in a row, 11 months in a row, right? So, you know, inflation is a lagging indicator. We all should know that by now, my God, after saying that 150 times.
Not transitory, lagging.
Yeah, they're lagging. So, you know, the argument was that the Fed was following all this lagging shizzle. I just like to use that word, me and Snoop are close. And now all of a sudden, the Fed is looking forward. And now they're using their models to say, well, we're committed to 2%. We're not going to move the goalpost to 3% because we know the bond market.
Never going to happen.
Yeah, would never happen.
Yeah.
The market today's, the only thing I can surmise was that for some people, it took the recession off the table, because if we had another down, you know, employment and another somewhere, right, the trajectory would all say, okay. But to me, I'm sorry. It's the freaking algorithms that said, if we get a positive number, then that's an anti-recession gravity, right? And so we're going to buy. We're certainly going to cover. I mean, could you believe the moves in the banks? As I say, I actually did pretty well in the Zion Bank one. But
regionals did great today. The Spider Regional Bank ETF was up 6%. You had companies like PacWest up 80%. Western Alliance up over 40%. Just on the day trading. That's amazing.
Right. But think about it, Todd.
But hold on. I mean, the other day I asked you, so would you be a buyer of regional banks? And you even said, no, I'd stay away. I have to agree with you there. What do you think, Jeff? That I would not. I would stay away. I mean, if you could have sold into that strength today, if you were still holding and get out. But would you be a buyer at this time?
No, not. I mean, I'm not day trading these things. If you're going to do that, have at it.
Yeah, that's a day trading.
Future strategy, that's great. Not only am I not a buyer of the regional banks, we're not a buyer of a whole lot of things right now. I mean, I listen to my almanac. In addition to the seasonal trades, the seasonal patterns that I mentioned, we've got a lot of headwinds, obstacles, things in the way, and we are going to do our neutral stance, getting rid of some things, tightening up stops, looking for some defensive plays in healthcare and biotech, sectors that do well in the worst 6 months, gold, which is not great in the worst 6 months, but because of what's going on here with the rates, inflation, and the confusion of the debt ceiling, we're taking, and we're also just not, there's plenty of money to be made just sitting in bonds right now. You're looking at like 4.5%, 5% in most of the short-term bonds.
Yeah.
You just sit there and think for a while.
Yeah, we're about 70% in the, you know, essentially the 4.5% mutual funds or ETFs.
Mm-hmm,
which,
me too.
What's intriguing to me is that we did a pretty involved analysis, and some other people have as well, on, you know, this idea, like, let's just forget for a second that, you know, a bank in the United States, the only place in the world, doesn't have to mark their assets to market. In other words, it doesn't have to say every quarter, here's what they're actually worth in a, you know, if we sold them tomorrow. We're the only country that does that, right? Then if you take that metric, you just go past, there's about 2,200 banks that are essentially bankrupt because they have less assets than they have actual, you know, the money they owe via deposits. Then the second thing it just blows me away is that the Fed came in before all this stuff and said, hey, everything's fine. Paying, you know, Price Waterhouse came in and said, everything's fine. And now they're starting to come back and say, hey, wait a minute. We're looking at that. What the hell were we thinking?
You see Steve Leishman's question during the
you mean your identical twin brother?
He plays a mean guitar too.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
He was kind of shoved off with he was asked about, like, you guys were, what happened to the regulating? You guys saw something going on and you didn't know anything about it. And it was like, well, I mean, I was kind of half listening to it in the background, but it was a pretty pointy question.
Well,
and I think that's the other thing that we're looking at is, you know, I mean, you can't just have this free for all. These people are just giving themselves money and with people's deposits. It's not,
well,
happen,
I go back.
They're going to get cleaned up.
Jeff, when you were being born, or no, a little bit after when you were being born, I was selling
SNL.
Bonds. I was selling bonds to savings and loans, to banks and pension funds, et cetera. Just like the early 80s when, you know, actually we had like a 17% 30-year security, right? Bond. And I would tell these guys, I don't know if you really ever did any math, because I'm saying to myself, the savings and loans just got deregulated in 1981. Before that time, they could only do two things. They could take a deposit and they could mark the deposit up 200 basis points. And that was a mortgage. That was it. That's all they could do. So anybody who studied finance, those are like the C-minus students, right? And then all of a sudden, woohoo, you can buy any freaking thing you want. You can do a credit default. So and so people forget that 1,100 savings and loans went bankrupt between 1985 and, or 1986 and 1995. And I was working for Kidder Peabody. We were like going in and buying their shit that they, you know, but at least at that time, you couldn't hit your button on your phone and
right,
take 100% of your deposits out. And that's what I think the Fed somehow, you know, doesn't understand, that when Peter Thiel comes on and says, we're removing all our money out of Silicon Valley Bank on Twitter, and then $42 billion between 2:30 and 4 o'clock comes out of Silicon Valley Bank. Didn't somebody put a flag up? Didn't that, you know, make anybody's, you know, alive?
No, they dropped the ball again. They dropped the ball again. So there's one thing I want to point out here. You talk about the rates, and I remember my big brother, who's 10 years older than me, he reminds me that he had his first mortgage on his condo back then in the 80s. And it was like, you know,
16%,
15%, whatever. It was ridiculous. So, and, you know, he took me when I was in high school out there. But we've had this huge, fastest increase ever, 5 points. But it's still only 5, which is within the historical range. So the trend is steep, but the relative level is not like it was back when you were at Kidder, you know, cleaning up the SNL crisis.
Well, all right, but this is here. There's like two other points that, again, I just get me here. Because I personally, in just doing the math, you know, remember, for a while, things were all peachy because the FDIC came in and said, we're going to cover all deposits. I don't care what you have, right? And then The Biden administration said, hey, wait a minute. There's a lot of Brits there. I don't know if you know that. Hey, wait a minute.
The coronation is this weekend, so I could see the theme going on.
They cut that back, too.
Well, this is a whole British outfit. I'm dressed for the, not, you know, the inaugural.
For the people that are listening, you definitely want to watch the video and check out Toby's outfit right now for Cinco de Mayo. But Toby, right, continue with that thought. Continue with that final thought.
So the point was that now we're getting into the commercial loans, because big banks don't do that. I mean, right here, Northern Bank of Arizona is owned by Zion, which is one of the reasons why I have short Zion, because they have $760 billion of commercial loans that roll over in the next 12 months. I mean, not just Zion, but I mean, these guys who make these. And those loans are like me. I have a commercial building and they say, great, so you can, you know, we'll lend you the money. It's like rolls over every 3 years and yada, yada, yada. Well, when they went to Silicon Valley Bank, they had on a $42 billion of property loans, which I've never gotten. I don't know. You know, I must be like the poor bastard here. You could take a 90% loan out on your Silicon Valley mansion for 10 years and only pay interest. There was no principal.
Wait, now, that sounds like 05, 06.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. But this is my whole thing. I swear to God, Scott, you know, Todd's
heard of those things.
Yeah. It's just that these folks did not live in the 80s. They didn't, you know, watch all these savings loans get blown up. They didn't see how deregulation, because essentially there was no way a national bank would be able to do an interest only 10-year loan and not at least market to freaking market.
Right.
So
it was IO was the buzzword, right? Interest only.
Yeah, interest only.
Yeah.
And so that's one. So when those start to fail, I mean, look at freaking big guys walked away. There's like 25 buildings in New York City that are going to be empty. They're going to default, big numbers. But that's New York City. That's a microcosm. But if people think the bank problem is over, the only way it would be over is if the Fed and the FDIC comes out. So, oh, by the way, the FDIC only has $126 billion in their kitty. They started out with like a $1.1 trillion. So, So the FDIC is going to get bailed out before any banks gets bailed.
We have to talk about QT at some point.
I'm totally with you.
We're gonna talk about QT. Let's talk about that after the break, though, because I want to leave it right here on this one. And to follow up with you guys again on that and continue with the theme about the banking.
When do we talk about the Kentucky Derby? That's what I want.
That's a glad you asked, Toby, because we are going to give you our Kentucky Derby picks, because in addition to Cinco de Mayo, it's also Derby weekend. So what good would we be if we just did not give you our Derby picks? But we will give those to you after the break. Please stay with us.
Buy, hold, sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding or seeking, feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
Travis Carmichael, the seemingly social financier who successfully left behind a blue-collar Baltimore upbringing by transforming himself into an elite hedge fund manager branded with a sterling reputation for creating enviable profit machines for many of the world's most powerful people. His success proved costly as he became incessantly vulnerable after a series of careless mistakes and poor decisions originated from his love affair with the brilliant and stunningly beautiful Russian operative Naomi Knight. Through a roller coaster journey of greed, mystery, sex, and murder, Travis and Naomi's metamorphosis from scorching Wall Street couple to unrecoverable bliss is forever locked for posterity as one of New York City's most interesting tales. Coming to you from former Wall Street hedge fund executive and frequent contributor on CNBC, Fox News, Bloomberg, and CNN, I, Todd
Schoenberger feature a historical novel inspired by true events, including but not limited to those who possess impenetrable dreams of Manhattan wealth and the consuming lifestyle it perpetuates. Please pick up your copy of No Lie Lives Forever, available on Amazon and finer bookstores near you.
Did you know virtually all vessels traveling in the U.S. have to be American built, owned, and crewed? That's thanks to the Jones Act, which is the bedrock of the American maritime industry.
On the American Maritime Podcast, we cover the topics that matter most to the 650,000 men and women of American maritime, while also being accessible for the average listener to learn about this industry.
Every episode features a new guest, including congressional leaders, senior military officials, leading policy analysts, and other experts.
Come aboard and listen wherever you get your podcasts or watch on the American Maritime Partnership's YouTube channel.
Welcome back to Buy, Hold, Sell, where the Dow is up over 540 points today after the April jobs report came out much hotter than expected. And where we get from here? Well, still, the markets, as great as they were today, we still had a down week across the board, across all indices. But we saw companies like Apple that came out with their earnings up almost 5% today. And on those regional banks that we were just talking about, we had PacWest up over 80% today, Western Alliance up over 40%. Looks like the good times are here. We also have Jeffrey Hurst from the Stock Traders Almanac. And Jeff, I got to go back to you on this one. I mean, you have a sell signal, but what do you think? I mean, let's follow up on that Q2. What are your thoughts?
Jeff, one day is we're all back to even now. Well, just one day.
One day. Everything's great. Good times are
here.
First
of all, remember, we got in October.
Yeah. Quit busting his balls, Todd, for crying out loud.
And we only had our down S&P sell signal. We didn't sell everything. We're not going away. We tightened up some stops.
Okay.
Going neutral. Right. But this banking thing's probably not over. I'm not touching it. We are not touching a lot of things right now. We're being patient, calm, waiting for the cycles and seasonals and the fundamentals on the technicals to all converge again sometime later in the year. But I brought up the point of what you were talking about the banks and what people don't know about the 80s is quantitative tightening. We contend in my research department that it's probably ending a lot sooner than everyone would expecting with the Fed saying there's no way that they can continue to tighten up for, yeah, maybe they'll do it for a few more months, but it's never getting back to those pre-pandemic levels in our book. Maybe down to $6 or $7 trillion, the balance sheet. Maybe not. What's it still up over 9, right? Or
yeah, it's 8.2.
So I mean, okay, well, maybe Jeff, they have another trillion off.
Jeff, what's a trillion? Jeff, does the Fed hike again in June?
I don't think so. I think Toby?
They remember he changed the language, and when they changed the language on the meeting speech, that means that they're not going to do that. But going to Jeff's point, it's rather esoteric. But you know, I love Jeff, so I'm gonna build him up a little bit. First off, to understand quantitative tightening, you need to understand what quantitative easing was, right? So quantitative easing was you see this keyboard? Okay, there's a guy on the second floor at the New York Fed. And when somebody calls and says, we need you to buy $500 billion of bonds from Federal Reserve, you know, member banks, he goes like this. Okay, so what happens is he doesn't have any money to buy those. The button, you know, prints digital money. It buys real bonds. And now the bank has cash and they're not sitting in bonds that, you know, that they can't trade, et cetera. So what are they going to do with that $500 billion? Well, if they work with hedge funds, they call up the hedge fund and say, dude, I can lend you some serious cash for seriously low interest rates and blah, blah, blah. Okay, done. Give me $1 billion. In other words, that money gets into the system. This is, you know, John Maynard Keynes issue that inflation always is monetary, no matter what. It's always so. We have never done that before. Now we're going to reverse. Now we're taking that money out. And the way they do it is still the same thing. You hit one button and now you took, you know, the money that you just made up, you took it out.
They just don't buy the stuff back. They just don't buy more.
Yeah, they let it run off. Yeah. So we've never been there. There's 115 PhDs at that freaking Fed building down in D.C., which I've been to a couple of times.
Probably 114 too many.
104. Well, and they can't figure out what the F quantitative tightening is actually doing. When the banks, you know, you get this report every week on bank lending standards, and they went from here to here in a week. Okay, well, that's quantitative tightening, but that's not quantity. First off, the word quantitative, I've looked it up five times. It has nothing to do with buying securities from banks or selling or letting them run off. I mean, it was a Ben Bernanke. He got his PhD and he got his Nobel Prize on it, right?
So, wasn't there a lot of PhDs in long-term capital management too?
A lot. And I just started publishing John Dessauer's World Investor, and he was loaded up on Thailand and Korean stocks, which just got crushed when all of a sudden, you know, people wanted their money back. And then, you know, Orange County went bankrupt, and, you know, it was quite the scene. I'm just trying to say, Todd and Jeff, that I have like a stack of papers in the back here. And one is every reason why we're going into recession. The other one is the same amount of is why we're going to avoid the relationship. You know, so we're coming in for that soft landing and that inflation's on its way up. I've never seen this street so confused, so diametrically confused. And I honestly, it's because we've never been here before. There's a lot of analogs in parts of this, but on top of everything else, to have a banking crisis on top of a European war, on top of a pandemic, on top of 12 years of free money, and now it's, you know, with that money being drained, there's no way to model this. And so therefore, I believe, like me, that money managers who have to put money out are saying, just buy the fucking mega cap stocks. I can't lose there. You know, they bought, did you see Facebook go up 48, you know, or 64% after that big sell-off?
I have some hedge fund friends, and they're kind of chomping the bit that this has turned into a stock picker's market. What do you guys take on that?
Well, I agree. So we run at my new RIA, we run relative strength sectors. And then I've been building micro sectors. So my favorite one, obviously, is AI. And my AI micro sector has outperformed the mega caps by 3-1. Now that's stock. And if you're a index fund that has to own everything, you don't get anything. But yet last year, Jeff, as you know, for once again, stock pickers completely underperformed the indexes. You know,
one of our stocks, one of our semiconductors, we do stock picking. We use a fundamental screen in our technical analysis, the seasonal overlay. Cool. You heard it. It works pretty well. Super microcomputer.
Yeah. Took a nice it's an AI stock. Stock, brother. It's an AI stock. We have it in our index.
It is. But I got to tell you, you know, we look at it. We wait for the 10Qs and 10Ks to show us revenue growth and earnings growth and acceleration of revenue and earnings growth. And that comes through without any story to it. And then the story behind it, you know, reveals itself later.
Yeah. Well, being 70% in cash, but the stuff that we're in were MLPs and energy. We just finally sold the energy, letting that come back. But we're up, you know, like 38% for the year by being 70% in cash. But the stuff that went up, plus our AI stocks.
And some shorts.
The shorts, I loved shorting, you know, then I started running other people's money. And unless I'm like here, like this morning, I had stops, I had buy stops, but you couldn't, not to get technical, but I couldn't really use buy limits on these shorts because they blow right through it. So I had to use, you know, market orders. Yep. And so I got 20% less profits on the shorts.
So one of the guys,
day by day, Jeff, it's not like the old days where you could just be short for, you know, 6 months into 2008, 2009.
The guys that I know that pick the small stocks, the microcap stocks, they're long the stocks they like, and they do a lot of tire kicking. And they're short the big caps, the overvalued big caps on the indices as their sort of hedge. I mean, this is kind of old school hedge fund style stuff where you actually are hedged.
Yeah.
For you know, the black swan type event. And they're 90% long, 40% short.
Yeah.
I would have no
hair left. I'd have your amount of hair left if I was doing that. I just can't.
This is congenital.
I know that. I know your dad. I know your dad. Probably his dad was the same way. So, I'm with you.
Well, I'm
white Anglo-Saxon Tony, Protestant. This hair is all mine. I didn't have to do a thing.
Don't hide the hair under a sombrero today, okay? That's all I'm going to say to you. So you got to keep that thing flowing. You look great. So listen, let's switch topics. Kentucky Derby time, guys. I know it's Cinco de Mayo. Everybody's excited about the day. And obviously with the market action, there's always time to celebrate. But let's talk about tomorrow's Kentucky Derby. We were just talking off air about our favorites, and there's so much hype about this race. It's the 149th race in Churchill Downs. What do you guys have? Toby, who's your pick to be to win the Kentucky Derby?
Well, first off, I would like to take a moment seriously for the four horses that died this week at Churchill.
I
grew up right near Santa Anita Park.
There
in
you
Arcadia.
Go.
And we used to go.
You saw Seabiscuit. Didn't you see Seabiscuit?
Hey, don't go there. So we used to go over like 7, 8 years old, and we would like clean out the stalls, and we'd get, you know, tickets to watch the stuff. I've followed horse racing. I have dear friends who are like, you know, executives at Santa Anita Park. So I called them and said, who's going to win? And Pete Kucha, God bless him, who runs the gambling there, because now you have gambling at Santa Anita Park too, not just horses. You can do it 24/7. He says, who told you, Scott?
Todd Forte.
I have not been drinking. Forte.
Put the margarita down. Put the margarita down. Forte.
He says it on a horse-by-horse basis. If you take all their times, particularly on this track, which is very dry and very fast, that Forte will, if Forte leads after the first furlong, then no one's going to catch him.
So,
I got to say, real quick though, Jeff, on that one, you got Todd Pletcher, trainer from San Antonio. He only has had one Triple Crown winner, though, in his career, and he always has multiple horses in these races. So that's
but
he doesn't
cheat like the other freaking trainers who've been kicked out. I don't know. You know,
there you go. Yeah, like Bob.
I mean, when the horse goes. After that means they're on a little butte, okay? They're on a little butte.
Oh my goodness. Okay. All right, Jeff, who do you have in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I went the old-fashioned method. I went and I looked at all the names. And I saw one that jumped out at me. Two Phils. But then I looked into it to check my research. Two Phils. I have a couple of friends named Phil that I talked to. They helped me out with some things. So I got two Phils I work with. But then two Phils has won a whole bunch of races recently, showed up in the top three, been, you know, he's like those mid-pack sort of, you know, workhorses, if you pardon the pun. And it just seemed like a pretty decent bet. The odds were not crazy. It's not some long shot. It was like 9 or 8 to 1 or 2 or something like that, you know, bounced around a little bit. So two Phils for me.
All right. 9 to 1 right now. Current odds are 9 to 1 on that.
And it's
horse,
also
actually,
like a,
that's
like
not
a market trade. You know, you get a fill. You get your trade fill. I got two fills today.
I like that. That's a great
I'll
way
be here all week. Tip your waiters and waitresses. Okay.
Who you got, Todd?
Well, going with that same theory, I picked the number one horse and post position number one. Name is Hit Show. And what isn't it so fitting that Hit Show would be number one? Now for the mile and a quarter race taking place in Churchill Downs. And the reason why I'm picking Hit Show is because Buy, Hold, Sell is a Hit Show. So the segue into this is in 1 month, you will be able to watch Buy, Hold, Sell on Apple TV and Roku. We know it's a hit, and we think you're going to love it too. So I'm saying Hit Show is going to win it. Bet the trifecta. Hit Show, two Phils, Forte. Take the box. I'm telling you, you're going to be cheering.
Jeff,
just like you are today, you're going to be cheering really good tomorrow.
You got to get Schoenberger out of Buffalo. I mean, I swear to God, his level of
sophistication. You got to get the three of us together somewhere.
Yeah.
No doubt. His level
of sophistication is rolling down the drain here. Holy mackerel.
Oh, my goodness.
What about the January indicator trifecta we already hit this year?
That's right. You can parlay that right into this. I'm telling you, it's going to be lots of fun. So listen, that does it for us today for Buy, Hold, Sell. What a wonderful week. We look forward to so many great things next week. We have some big time guests, so please stick with us. And we do enjoy having you here. So on behalf of Tobin Smith and Jeffrey Hirsch of the Stock Traders Almanac, and as a side note, check out Stock Traders Almanac by Googling it and pick up your copy.
Hey, wait a minute. How about
TobinSmith.io
at True Market Insiders?
Tobin Smith.
We launch our new newsletter on the 10th, and we have over 4,500 new subscribers in our little promotion. I don't know how they do that. I just write the stuff.
TrueMarketInsiders.com. That's what you got to do. TrueMarketInsiders.com. If you check that out, you guys actually should collaborate. Maybe do something where you get a discount if you buy the combo
package. I don't ever agree with them ever. It's no fun.
I knew you were going to be upset that we're agreeing today.
That's right, amigo. That's right. You look great. All right. So on behalf of Tobin and Jeffrey, I'm Todd Schoenberger. Thank you once again for joining us on Buy, Hold, Sell. We'll catch you next time.
Take care.
Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
I want you to smash that like button.
On any given day in Washington, policy proposals are created, debated, and decimated by tens of thousands of people and organizations working behind the scenes. On 80 Proof Politics, a guest and I will visit a D.C. watering hole and distill the art of advocacy by pulling back the curtain a bit and taking a look at how they play their part in the sausage factory we call our federal government. So if you're at all interested in how the sausage is made, pull up a chair, grab a drink, and join us. After all, what goes better with sausage than a tall, cold one?